And up next, it's a newly recorded program from Phil Taylor. The Taylor Report is next.
CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and we're going to be reporting from the home front, a new experience for everybody. The matters we'll take up today are the coronavirus, obviously, COVID-19, the response to it, how the Canadian government, the U.S. government, Chinese, World Health Organization, others are dealing with the matter. And we will also talk about the U.S. presidential election, because it's going to be impacted by this development of corona around the world, the pandemic. And I should say, in relation to that, more pointedly, Tulsi Gabbard, her decision to drop out of the race. We need to talk about it. To begin with, on the matter of the coronavirus, it is now declared to be a pandemic, and we have a world organization. We should be very fortunate, realize we're fortunate. The World Health Organization is giving us a scientific analysis, is giving us the data, is giving us expert point of view. It is a wonderful phenomenon, actually. We're lucky to have it. And particularly in light of the political issues, which we talk about on the Taylor Report rather frequently, which is the tendency of states to define issues. I think everybody feels more comfortable if we say, well, what is the consensus amongst doctors and people fighting this matter, facing it internationally? What is their point of view? And to speak right to the matter, the World Health Organization is reporting that China's efforts have been very exemplary. The first breakout that was noted by the international community was in Wuhan, China. China itself identified it, and China developed the policy to contain it and, frankly, defeat it. Again, sort of a new thing, actually, because there was a time when epidemics ran their course and governments simply scrambled to get out of the way and treat the wounded, as it were. But with modern techniques and modern organization and mutual commitment, the plan is to defeat viruses, to do their best to contain them and defeat them. China has done that. And the World Health Organization is that body which has endorsed the effort. I stress all of this because in the matter of how to speak of this health issue, some governments have decided, and I say some, I think I'm almost talking about one, that government of the United States has decided to weaponize the subject and try to make this use a racial term, Chinese virus. World Health Organization has already labeled the virus COVID-19, and that's as a result of discussion amongst the leading medical people of the world in conferences. They've said it is always a mistake to try to identify by ethnicity or nation a virus of this kind. And so in 2015, they made a decision not to do that. So when President Trump chooses to say it's a Chinese virus, he knowingly, consciously flagrantly violating that agreement. And it brings us back, of course, that would be because of this phenomenon of American exceptionalism, the tendency to feel they have to be always in command of the situation, and also when they have problems to offload the problem onto others. So we need to stick very closely to the facts, and the starting place for that is the World Health Organization. To point out that the World Health Organization was invited by the government of China to come and observe and make suggestions and analysis and help in addressing the struggle against COVID-19. And they did so, and they came away impressed. On the Taylor Report, we talked about this, that one of the doctors who was in that group that went to China for a period, I think, of 2 weeks, 10 days to 2 weeks, perhaps longer. That doctor said, and we played it on CIUT, he said that they were doing a really exemplary job. He was particularly impressed that when the issue of extra beds, hospital space came up in China, that they went to work and built a hospital, an entire hospital. Actually, they built more than one, but one of them they built in 10 days. And the Canadian doctor said that was really showed that they took the virus seriously, and they spared no pain to get it done. And he said, and the most telling quote was, if he was sick, he'd like to be in China because of the approach they took. That is something that the United States has not done. And actually, it's beginning since Trump and Pompeo, basically, it's almost the two men. There's many other American officials are not using this term, Wuhan or China virus, but the President of the United States and his Secretary of State, Mr. Pompeo, are going out of their way to see if they can make a problem on this front. And it's worth noting, and we should point out, that the United States has not invited the World Health Organization to come to the United States and help in the assessment. Instead, we're seeing a case of hubris, of arrogance, I'm all right, Jack, kind of mentality. And it's because they don't want to find themselves in a position of having to treat other people as equals. Everything always has to be under their control, which is an extremely dangerous way to look at the world. Nonetheless, they're doing it. Let's talk about the progress being made in the case of China, and we could do this dramatically, put it this way. Starbucks is reopening all of its operation in China because they are now in a position to say that in particularly Wuhan, Hubei, there are no new cases. They're not having new cases, and they have zero number of suspected cases. And there are no longer any suspected cases pending results. That is to say, they have actually defeated it. This doesn't mean they're out of the woods because it's a pandemic. And now China is faced with, like other countries, with COVID-19 coming in from abroad, which they seem to be very capable of facing. But the city that everyone was talking about is closed down. Wuhan is opening up. People are going back to work. And as I say, Starbucks has a symbol. Has announced they are opening their stores, reopening all their stores. in China. And this comes at a time when we hear that Starbucks is closing up some stores in Canada. Can't find a better way to make that point. Now, the world is actually very impressed. Italy, Bangladesh, Vietnam, Singapore, Holland, have all spoken up in praise of China for the effort it made. And incidentally, China praises people back. In the case of Italy, China pointed out that when they began to have their problem, notified the world late December, beginning of January, they got assistance from Italy. Now it's making all the headlines that, of course, the Chinese are supplying medical material to Italy, but it's reciprocal. Italy did not hesitate to help China, and China is not hesitating to help Italy. I tell you that at a time when Iran needs help. They're getting help from China, by the way, and Russia and others are trying to help them. But the United States is blocking through sanctions. And a matter of fact, in the middle of this are increasing sanctions on Iran, which, by the way, is really a good way to shoot yourself in the foot. When you have a pandemic, it has to be a common effort to struggle against it. That is, if you have take a scientific approach. But if you push all science aside and you have an ideology of America first and of great nation exceptionalism, American exceptionalism, the indispensable nation, you are irrational. And it causes a problem. But back to the point, China is assisting others, and they're pointing out that others have assisted them. Recently, Newsweek magazine and Time, I believe, they began to say, China's trying to curry favor with the world. I thought, well, why not? Isn't that, that's mutuality. That's the trying to reach common ground, to have mutual support, or as the Chinese like to say, win-win. So, now there's a subject that's come up that I think is, and you're listening to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM, and we're doing our homeland report, or house report. We're all kind of somewhat distant from each other, but I'm hoping this will reach our listeners. A term has come up, it's nice to examine. When it became obvious about 10 days ago, a week 10 days ago, that the Chinese were being successful in Wuhan and had isolated it so that it did not become a pandemic inside China. It was not spreading to other cities because of the lockdown that they imposed. Everyone waited to see if that would work. It did work. It was a success. So it was couldn't be hidden. It was there to see. The World Health Organization was affirming their success. So here, as the crisis began to slowly reach the attention of the people who run the place, the question was, well, what are we going to do? And some of our leaders said, and it was raised, well, how about China? This seems to be setting an example how to fight the virus. So leaders said things like, well, they're being draconian in China. We couldn't be draconian. We couldn't be that draconian. Although now, a few days have gone by, and I notice that people seem to be ready for some draconian, however they understand that word. But the obvious question is, well, why not? If it is a matter of saving lives from a disease, from a virus, I should say, not being a doctor, from this COVID-19, Well, why wouldn't you do what you have to do? In a hospital, they do. Hospitals are draconian. They say, you can't go in that room. This person will not be there. We're going to be operating now. You will go downstairs and wait, and we'll get back to you. That's what they do. That's draconian, isn't it? But you're also doing the necessary medical work to save lives. So the word, we should not be afraid to permit medical professionals to carry out the necessary work and to defeat the virus. What are we afraid of? Maybe we're afraid of the word draconian. So I want to say something, kind of remind our listeners. Draco, from whom we get the word draconian, was the first lawgiver, they tell us, of the city of Athens. And what made him special is not that we now use draconian, but however, Draco was a reformer. Draco said, we have to have laws that people understand, and they have to be written down, because they had a system of oral laws and also tribal or feudal, gang methods of settling disputes among parties. And people would say, well, you know, you're not supposed to do that. Not supposed to do what? So he struck Draco, the first lawgiver, and he was given the power by an elected body. He said, we're going to have written laws. And of course, some of those, you know, this was ancient, this was BC and 600 roughly. So they were rather rough in enforcement of laws. A distinction that Draco made, and it lives on to this day, is that he made a distinction between murder and unintentional death. In other words, we'd say second degree, third degree, you know, first degree being forming the intent and carrying it out and killing somebody. He said, obviously there should be a difference, and he made the difference, a distinction, so that someone who had caused another person's death was not put to death if it were shown to be unintentional. But going back to the simple point, and all humanity throughout time has appreciated this, put it in writing. If you have a law, let me know what it is. And that was Draco. So when somebody says something is, oh, that's draconian, it's really unfortunate because it immediately, that's supposed to mean, well, you'd never do that. Let's give Draco, the lawgiver, some credit, and also say, what is it we're addressing? What is the problem? And when you have a public health issue, decisions are going to have to be made. And by the way, trust is going to have to develop. Decisions have to make some sense. But we also want those decisions to be made. We're having some trouble. Anybody can see that today, in that the population of Canada and in the United States, you're seeing a lot of it, seems to be rather disbelieving and skeptical about their leaders. That's very understandable. That's a very understandable phenomenon. That when you have mixed messages and you have confused ideas, and you have, in the case of our great leader, and that's Donald Trump, our great leader is not Justin Trudeau. We all know that Trump has the power to dictate or influence those states, smaller states around him. So he's a kind of political virus at the moment. And because of the way he speaks, and when I say Donald Trump, he speaks for the United States. And I really don't, if we have a man named Biden who's running, they say, for president, he's become very quiet. So Trump's the guy. And when they speak, people clearly are having their doubts about what they're hearing. Now, when they have their doubts, they begin to look after a very famous number, which is number one. They look after themselves, or so they think. And of course, if you have a bunch of people looking after number one, you have a lot of problems. And we're witnessing that. So confidence has to be restored. And I would say follow the World Health Organization. Insist on respect for international law, respect for other, mutual respect among states. Set aside differences in the face of a common health problem, health issue, and say that we will all do our best to cooperate with each other, that we will end the sanctions on Iran, we'll end the sanctions on Syria. We will guarantee that whatever medical assistance is available to be shared will be shared. Don't try to weaponize people's suffering. That's the direction we need to go. And on that score, we need to also correct records so that people know the facts. And when Trump, for example, says that we have this problem from China, we should take a quote from him, from his tweet. As you all know, he communicates by tweet. He's a bird. On January 24, he tweeted, and this is the words of Donald Trump on January 24, China has been working very hard to contain the coronavirus. The United States greatly appreciates their efforts and transparency. It will all work out well. In particular, on behalf of the American people, I want to thank President Xi! Exclamation point added. So, all right, he said that on January 24th, and now it is March 21, as I speak, and he's begun to say, oh, you know, the Chinese caused this, etc. He's confused, but the problem is that animus that he brings in contradiction to his own words, is making it dangerous for Asian Americans, and it's also a lie, and we need to nail this down. And I know we can't ask Justin Trudeau, certainly not Chrystia Freeland, or Mr. Champagne, to have the wherewithal, the guts, to contradict the President of the United States. I wouldn't even ask him to do it, actually. Well, I would, but they're not going to. It's a superpower, and you have to be very careful what you say to a superpower. But they should really be working very hard at this time for the good of the Canadian people and the world, people of the world, to clearly and sharply speak in other language and also show some goodwill. I would think it's within their capacity, for example, to buy and trade medical personnel, medical medicines, etc., with China. If we're going to be short of material, China is quite willing to provide that, I'm sure. All you have to do is ask. So I would suggest to Justin, ask. And don't sell to Trump. If Trump says anything, say, if he would like to provide that same medicine, we'll take it. But in fact, we seem to have a problem of shortage. And there is a country that seems to have the capacity to can produce this and a willingness to share. So that would be a way to help. And of course, the other thing that Canada could do would be to end the sanctions on the Islamic Republic of Iran and to reduce hostilities and to restore relations. The world to fight the virus actually needs peace. I know that's a long shot, but that is in fact what we need. And the same extends to Syria. There's been an animus here against Syria. Syria has been fighting terrorism. Nothing is gained by pouring gas on that fire, though Canada has been contributing to pouring the gas on the fire. So we ought to stop that. Going way back to when Justin was running for office, he told the Canadian people that he thought we should reset our relations with Russia. He thought we should increase in war and strengthen relations with China. And he also said we should reopen our embassy in Tehran. Well, he was right. And now, he's long forgotten it, but it's time to remind him, because in fact, that would be a great way to contribute to fighting the coronavirus, COVID-19, and also creating a new world order, not one designed by Washington, but a new world order in which countries are asked to observe international law, go to the appropriate international institutions like the United Nations, or in the current crisis, the World Health Organization, and work together. It might be time, this, and by the way, you're listening to the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. It's 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. We won't be doing interviews today because it's rather difficult to do. But it is flowing from this discussion of fighting a virus that threatens humanity. It is time to go back to our roots and also to work out what our values are. This is a time to repent and make good. We should ask clearly and loudly of any leader here, is when did we vote on to have a new Cold War? Because we don't need, the world doesn't need one and it doesn't want one. We don't need a nuclear arms race. We don't need bullying by superpowers. And there was a Cold War and we were told it was over. Now everybody's amusing themselves with talk about a new one. We never voted to do that. I know that the NDP, I know the Liberal Party, I know the Conservative Party have all just kind of slipped into this, but none of them put it on the agenda. And we should reject the new idea, the calm or the unthinking acceptance of the idea that we have to now be in an adversarial mode towards Russia and China, starting with them. Certainly never for Cuba. The Cubans have been suffering at the hands of the West, and that is part of the poison. But the big items were Russia and China, neither of whom have offered us any adversarial desire. They have asked why NATO expanded towards their border and the Russian border, and why under Obama a decision was made to, quote, pivot towards Asia to encircle China with military bases and intimidating talk. That is all counterproductive. It is dangerous to the survival of the planet, certainly dangerous to Canadian people, and we should ask, whoever asked put that on our agenda? Nobody. They announced policies. We never debated that. And Cold War is simply political jargon, and we should reject it. And someone says, "Well, Russia is an adversary." Since when? Where? How? There's absolutely no need for it. And the idea that China is an adversary. Canada has a problem with China made by Trump. We had wonderful business relationship and mutual profiting by China and Canada. But the United States decided unilaterally to demand that Canada arrest a Chinese businesswoman. We didn't have a debate about any of that. We simply had to follow the orders of an American president, which put us in a nasty, dark, and unproductive relationship to China. Completely unnecessary. Unless you define yourself as a sycophant and a gopher for Washington. So we need at this time, and the coronavirus provides us with the opportunity, we should say, let's re-examine our relations here. I'm going to give you one loud example to think about. President of Serbia has been knocking on the door. All the new Serbian presidents, or line of them, have been knocking on the door of the European Union, say, we want to be in the European Union. And they've been told, okay, we have your application. You can sit outside there and we'll think about it. So now, given the coronavirus situation, President of Serbia said, we have a problem, health issue, and we would like to buy medicine. We're not asking for a gift. We're not asking for a favor. We want to buy from the European Union. We want to get the supplies. And he was told no. And he is not happy. So he went on television. If you haven't seen it, go on the net and look at it. It's one of the moments to tell us where we are in political time, history. Go on and watch him. He called a press conference and he said, I asked the European Union for help. They didn't help me. He said, the European Union, Europe, we heard about, there is no solidarity. It's a myth. They didn't even respond to us. He said, so I'm writing a letter. I wrote a letter, pardon me, to China, to my brother, the president of China, President Xi, and asked, and he responded that China would, of course, help. And so he said, we've learned a little lesson. So this is what all the world is being taught. They're being taught a lesson in the negative style of doors being slammed in their faces, countries being told America's number one and they can shift for themselves, etc. Well, you know, there's an old saying, two can play that game. Any self-respecting state will find other means. Another president of some note, leading a country of at least 100 million people, President Duterte of the Philippines, who Canadians are fond of mocking, but he's a very respected leader in his country. They are glad of the policies he's been pursuing. I had a phone call with President Xi of China. He says, now we are having trouble with Corona. And he said, President Xi said to me, if you want help, we're happy to help. We know you would do that for us. He said, I like that. He said, I don't know if I'm going to ask him, but I appreciate who he is and his willingness to speak that way to us. So, you know, when Duterte and the president of Serbia started these things, you would have thought, well, the State Department and others would get together and say, hey, we're kind of flubbing this. We better warm in these relations, get things back on track. They don't do that. They actually shrug while harming their own security because they can't be bothered. They really don't have much use for what they think are conquered peoples. They think, he'll come around the hard way. That's a very dangerous situation. But anyway, I bring all this back to to note the fact that we're entering a new world. We're going to come out of the corona situation with some realignment. Italy is extremely pleased, I should say, appreciative of what China is doing for them, and the Philippines, and Serbia. And that'll be reflected. This is not going to be a one-off. This is going to be reflected in future conduct. So this is a matter which we have to make sure we note. So again, this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT, it's 89.5 FM. And we have other matters to talk about. We want to talk about Tulsi Gabbard, and we'll get to that. One last thing before we begin on the matter of Tulsi Gabbard, I'll just say about China, I neglected, and I should have said at the beginning, why have they been able to overcome the coronavirus in phenomenally short period of time in the view of the World Health Organization? This is not Phil Taylor telling you this. This is the World Health Organization. How are they able to do it in that short time? Now, my opinion, not the World Health Organization or anybody else, is the clue is in what is the name of the country. It's the People's Republic of China. The people, they actually do care about all the people. And that's what's made them an economic success. After being under the colonial boot for 100 years and being invaded by Japan and going through World War II with massive loss of life, and then going through a war with the American-sponsored Kuomintang regime of Chiang Kai-shek and defeating him, after all of that, and then being encircled and being in the Korean War with the Americans, after all that, they have reached a point where they are a leading country on the planet, among the great powers, and producing bullet trains, jet aircraft, highways, banks, industries, building new cities, all of that because they have organized themselves into the People's Republic. It is, of course, a country of deep roots and culture going back thousands of years, and they, by clearing out the foreigners and by uniting under in one system, a socialist system, they're able to have phenomenal growth. Before all this crisis of the health issue started, we were being told, this is by the International Monetary Fund and World Bank and others acknowledged, certainly UN and all and parties that studied the Chinese economy said that they had lifted more than 700 million people, 700 million people out of poverty in a matter of 10 years. So it is obviously, let's go back to the name, the People's Republic. We don't, of course, have a People's Republic of Canada. That is, so it isn't sort of built into the name as to who the government is answerable to. But they do, because Secretary of State Pompeo likes to say Communist Party of China because he knows that'll get people's hair stand up on the back of their neck if he says that in his culture. But yes, of course, the communist movement of China from day one was had as its goal to liberate the poor and to give them land, to get them employed, to get them education, and to organize so that all of China could benefit. That's a very simple, indisputable fact. And poor old Pompeo, who believes in that he's going to be raptured up to heaven and all kinds of cockeyed nonsense, he can't even begin to comprehend what he's talking about. But we need to know what we're talking about. And if we're going to credit them, credit their system. And they do deserve the credit. Again, this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. But let us talk about the weighty matters of the U.S. presidential election. What is going on there? What has happened? I have to say that 1 week ago, I was happy that Tulsi Gabbard was still in the U.S. election. And I pointed out that when Biden and Bernie debated, neither of them called attention to the fact that there was a woman of color who actually has won some delegates and whose name was still on the ballot, was not in their debate. And they accepted the corporate Democrat approach and the media approach of not allowing Tulsi to debate. And I said I really wish she had been there, because she would have actually made both of them look bad. She would have been death on Biden and a problem for Bernie. Well, since that broadcast, she has made the decision to withdraw. Not withdraw. What is it? Conceded that she doesn't believe there's any reason to continue this. And some are angry with her. I am not angry with her, because it seemed to me she only had the tactical decision of how long to keep the thing going. She had said that she was not in the presidential race to win, although she would like to win. And of course, by putting your name there, you always have the chance of winning, like people who buy lottery tickets. But she said her point was to fight against the policies of both the Democratic and Republican administrations of endless wars. And she was called for the withdrawal of American forces from Syria, from Iraq. She called for the ending of sanctions against the Islamic Republic. She called for ending the nuclear arms race. She called for a return to diplomacy as a method of dealing with other states, and which means that you speak to the leaders of any state. You don't prejudge them as to whether they're whatever you might prefer as your own system, their system. She knew that was a self-defeating approach. And she also called for dropping any charges against Julian Assange. She said the same for Edward Snowden. She said that both of them had made a valuable contribution, and the American people needed the truth. In the United States Congress, she brought a motion on the question of impeachment. She differed with the Democratic Party, her party, and she said she would not vote on impeachment unless they were going to impeach Trump for his illegal wars. And she has led the move in Congress to limit the power of the president to make war. She points out that the last time the United States Congress exercised its duty under the Constitution of declaring wars was that of Japan, the war which began in 1941. Since that time, the American Congress has not followed its responsibility. So her voice is very important. And I'm not going to speak of her in the past tense. I think she has a great future. But let's face the fact, she is a Democrat. She's a member of the Democratic Party. If you want to characterize these parties, the Republican Party is a war party and the Democratic Party is a war party. Actually, the Democrats led the wars, World War I, World War II, Korea, and Vietnam were initiated under Democratic administrations. Of course, it was the Democrats who invaded Cuba, Bay of Pigs, if you want to put that label on it. Of course, also the Democratic Party has had more of what we call reformers and radical representatives. Dennis Kucinich comes to mind, former Governor Gravel of who is very opposed to the Vietnam War and has, he's still with us and a wonderful man, actually, supporter of Tulsi Gabbard. So there are these individuals who've come into play. But when you enter a race the way she did, you go to the Democratic Party and you say, she's a congresswoman from Hawaii, and she said, I wish to be in the, put my name in to be nominated by the party, and I'm going to seek the endorsement of the states. And it's a nightmare maze Disneyland story of how to get to be nominated by a party, but she played the game as you're supposed to play it. Well, of course, if you put your name in and you say, I want to be your party to nominate me, our party, the question is, so we assume you're going to run, you're going to have your chance. Are you going to endorse the one who wins the party nomination? Well, the candidate always says, yes, I will do that, even though I don't agree with them, but I'm going to, and I'll do my best to be nominated. They say they will endorse the winner. That is called playing the game. That's what you do. And people who have watched Tulsi seem shocked that when she withdrew, she said, well, I'm endorsing Biden. She did that because the race is over, in the sense that Bernie is not whom she previously supported, by the way. She supported Bernie in 2016, and it cost her. When she decided to support Bernie, she had just been named to the Democratic National Committee, a plush job, and it means you're an insider. Someday they'll make you either an ambassador or name you to the Supreme Court. It means you're in that little circle. You could become all kinds of big things. They said to her, well, I mean, you walk off on us and go to Bernie, you're going to pay the price. And believe me, they're going to try to make her pay. So, at any rate, so she had done this, and and here we find ourselves in 2020 when she and Bernie are in the same race against each other. But my understanding is that Bernie did not reach out to her, was not interested in her, for reasons known to Bernie and his team. And of course, let's put that in the gossip department. I mean, apparently it's true, but I'm not going to beat it, make it the key thing. The key thing is that she decided about 10 days ago, when the coronavirus thing happened, the Democratic Party was starting to have, still had some rallies, and still had some, began to have these votes where people had to come out, like in Illinois and Washington State and elsewhere. And her position was, we shouldn't do that. We're putting people at risk. It isn't necessary. We should find some other means to do this, but we should not be risking people's lives in this process. That was her position. As it turned out, that was everybody's position, because now everybody's saying, oh, we can't have these meetings, and they're hedging on any further voting because people aren't supposed to be gathering in numbers. So she said, she of course ended her campaigning, and then looking at all the results as they have come in, Bernie's chances are nil. His only hope is, and I hate to put it this way, is that if something rather unfortunate were to happen to Biden. She did what she felt like doing. Her basic position hasn't changed a bit. She will still speak against war, against arming terrorists in Syria. She will call for the withdrawal of American troops from Syria. So in my mind, she's doing all the things she should do. The main thing she should do is continue to be herself. But if you're in the Democratic Party, that's where you do it. And so for people to get pained at her, I would say, are you a member of the Democratic Party? Did she promise you something that she didn't do? Because she never, it was never in doubt that she was said, would have to endorse whoever was the party nominee, because otherwise she would have to say, I was in bad faith and I was lying and I'm now going to do something else. Incidentally, Hillary and all the warmongers of the Democratic Party said, Tulsi Gabbard is a Russian agent. She's some kind of Hindu. She's some kind of Modi person. They had all kinds of snaky things. So she's going to drop out and lead the Green Party. She's going to run as a Republican. They said all these things. Well, that isn't what she did. Actually, she's taken her virus over to Biden, because Biden had to say thank you for that. And now everybody's going to say, so the Russian agent, supporter of Assad. I remind you, this is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And we are talking about Tulsi Gabbard and why she dropped out of the Democratic nominating process. And just to remind you, the point is that she, going in, it was understood she was going to have to say she endorsed the winner. She chose not to play it out through July, which a lot of us hoped she would, but she didn't, for pretty reasonable reasons. That is, she can't go to rallies anymore, she'd been going state to state to state, raising these issues, particularly the key one of opposing American regime change wars. And it's also very important in this matter of who she is and how valuable her voice has been and continues to be, because she continues to speak out in Congress. She continues to take any opportunity to reach a national audience with the message opposing regime change wars and a nuclear arms race, and calling for restoration of relations with Syria and the Islamic Republic. We have to remember that nobody in the Canadian Parliament has done this. The parties are much more are policed. Actually, the New Democratic Party would throw her out on her ear if she said the things she has said. For example, she, of course, refused to go to speak to the APEC conference supporting Israel. She said would not attend. And by the way, Bernie, to his credit, did the same. And you could say, by the way, Bernie has been leading on that, and that's on that score. It's valuable that these things are done. It's, of course, extremely valuable that Bernie has been arguing for socialism, for a Medicare for all in the United States, and putting forward the ideas that the American people have not heard in modern history. So they're doing it, and she's doing it. And they deserve all the credit for that. But they are within the Democratic Party. Curiously enough, as I pointed out, the Democratic Party has a higher tolerance of difference of opinion than the New Democrats in Canada. The New Democrats, when they had people who were on the issues of the Middle East, of Gaza, the West Bank, etc., had raised their voices in criticism of Israel, and Jack Layton and his successor removed them, told them they weren't wanted. So we have to keep in mind, we don't have anything like them in the Canadian Parliament. The nearest we come is the once again loud voice of the Bloc Québécois. And they, not that they are anywhere near as eloquent or as to the point as Tulsi Gabbard and Bernie Sanders, and of course this woman Omar, and we don't always agree with Omar. Omar has actually favored the war against Syria. Not very nice, I have to say. Problematic. However, she has called for an end to the sanctions against Iran. These are voices representing people in the American Congress. There's no such phenomena in Canada. The Liberal Party doesn't allow it. Conservative Party doesn't allow it. You probably, most of our listeners to the Taylor Report, will know the term democratic centralism. People say, naughty, naughty, and they look down their nose at so-called communist governments and say, democratic centralism, terrible. I've never seen democratic centralism in the way it's practiced by the NDP. They tighten it down. They mug people, gag them, and make sure they don't say anything. And they also see to it they're not nominated. They withdraw their papers. It's a more authoritarian process, the parties of Canada, frankly. And we pay for it in Parliament. There's no one who can stand up and say anything. No one comes in touch Tulsi Gabbard in the Canadian Parliament. There's hardly anybody in the British Parliament. Actually, I don't know anybody in the British Parliament as clear, and that includes Jeremy Corbyn. I want to remind everybody that Tulsi Gabbard said she didn't accept the Russiagate business, and she opposed the impeachment on that ground. She said, "You haven't shown that that there was interference by the Russians." Wherein the Democratic Party was running in the opposite direction and insisting, as a matter of fact, quite to the contrary, of Tulsi. And she deserves a lot of credit for not playing along with that this phobic exercise. Actually, I'd say she nailed it and in a very important way when Washington Post and the New York Times reported that the intelligence services of America had approached Bernie Sanders a month or two ago, and they told Bernie that Russia was watching and helping his campaign and were trying to get him elected. And Bernie's reaction was, oh, good for them. I appreciate the work of the intelligence services. And he says, I'll send a message to Putin. He mustn't interfere in American politics, and I'll make sure that he doesn't. Tulsi Gabbard said, the people interfering in our election process are American intelligence services. Tulsi Gabbard said that. She hasn't withdrawn it. That's her position. We need her to continue in her political life and to continue to say these things. And she should be appreciated. That's a particularly important one because that's where Bernie went off the rails. Bernie lost his direction. And it is, I believe, a discredit to him that he joined in that. So, let's give credit to Tulsi Gabbard. And let's say, why can't we have a voice like Tulsi Gabbard in Canada that says, end these regime change wars, stop the war on Syria, withdraw American troops? That's what we need. We need elected people, and we got to go and elect some who'll do it. And we talked to us last week to some Green Party people. I'm going to keep pushing that. People who say they will stand up in Parliament and challenge the government on the NATO policy and the policy of aggression, interference in internal affairs, they're going to speak out. And that's who we need. Tulsi Gabbard did a good job. I got no complaints. I don't worry about the Democratic Party in its future. So this is Taylor Report, and we'll see you next week.
CIUT 89.5 FM encourages all of our listeners to stay informed about the status of the coronavirus.